Hour number two, Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe, Nick Keyser with us. We got Brandon, our intern, in the studio today as well. Happy Friday, Nashville. Hope everybody's avoiding traffic at all costs near Broadway because CMA Fest, I've seen the pictures. I haven't been down there yet, Junie, but woo, is it packed? It's crowded. Lots of crowds down there, so I would say avoid that with your car at all costs this weekend. But if you're going, have fun, enjoy. A lot going on in this building, especially during the Rex rant this morning. Joe Rexrode needed to put Junie Riddle in his place, so he thought.
He thought.
Regarding your argument, and let's be very clear, we're having a conversation about the quarterback situation with the Tennessee Titans. You have never said that Will Levis is better than Ryan Tannehill.
Never said
you
that.
You just made the argument for why he could start over him. Let's hear what Rexrode had to say on the Rex rant this morning, and then, Junie, we will allow you to have the floor. Here was what Joe Rexrode said this morning.
Yeah, man. We're just going to have to sort of disagree here. So I I'm not just speaking to Junie here because this happened last year with Malik Willis. Let's remember that, right? It was like, oh, it's time for Malik to take over. You know? I mean, there were people saying that at this time of last year.
Yep.
And the disappointment with Tannehill was much more fresh then. First of all, I'm glad at least Junie qualified what he was talking about with Tannehill's performance last year, because that's really the answer. I mean, let's be honest about what was around Ryan Tannehill. I don't know that Ryan Tannehill was spectacular last year amid those circumstances, but yes, he was good. He was. Think about like the San Diego, or not San Diego, the freaking Chargers game, where he blows up his leg early in that game and still does what he did until it just became a grapefruit on him.
I mean, he's peering out of the tent, just looking around. How's Malik doing? How's Malik doing out there?
I guess I better go out here on one leg. But look, I think Will Levis, and again, this is not just for Junie. Like, the Titans think they're good. I think there's a theme of all of these things, right? Anybody who thinks they're moving on from Byard, they think they're good. They're trying to pursue DeAndre Hopkins. They think they're good. They think they can win the AFC South. Listen to Jeffrey Simmons yesterday. You know, he said the R word, rebuild, and it came out of his mouth like an F-bomb.
So that was Joe Rexrode on the Rex rant this morning. Junie, I will let you have the floor for this segment.
Okay. So Joe said a few other things. Yes, I do. Because I took notes. I was listening. Because I figured that he was going to be doing his Rex rant after he responded to me on Twitter yesterday afternoon when I initially gave my pitch for this. Number one, I never said that Will Levis was better than Ryan Tannehill. I understand that right now, while we're sitting in, you know, May and June OTAs and minicamp, while they're in shorts, might I add, that Ryan Tannehill is better than Will Levis, who's only been here for 6 weeks. It's understandable. I am saying that will change. You know, it is no secret that I am a Steelers fan. And we just so happenly watched them draft a rookie quarterback with the 20th overall pick last year. And he started third in the depth chart. And all the way up through training camp, he was easily the third worst quarterback in all of camp. Once he got to training camp, once he got the live action reps, once he really started to get the playbook under him, these rookies progress faster than what you think. And again, I am still not saying that he is going to come out and beat Ryan Tannehill, but I'm saying that Kenny Pickett was the third best quarterback on the Steelers roster to begin training camp. And by the end of the year, there was no shadow of a doubt who the best quarterback on that roster is. It will change. Now, for why I believe that Will Levis should get in the mix as the starter some point in this season, whether to begin the season, which I feel like is highly unlikely, mm-hmm. or at the bye, because we know that that's probably a good period if they were to make a change to do it. This is about the future of the team. Trevor Lawrence under Doug Peterson is only going to take another step. We saw it in the second half of the season last year when he had the best quarterback rating to go down the stretch. He is only going to get better, and guess what? They added Calvin Ridley to the mix. He's only going to get better. And I will say this. with C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson this year, they are both going to be in the mix, and they have fifth-year options. Will Levis does not have a fifth-year option, okay? Getting him in the mix and seeing what you have in him and not basically holding him back, because I think Will Levis, with him playing in a pro system, all the things that he had to overcome in college, that he is more pro-ready than what people think. And I think that if you put him in here with a Derrick Henry, with an emerging Treylon Burks, with a Chigga Conquo, and his upside, I think it will be better for the future. Maybe not this season. Ryan Tannehill will get you more wins this year. But the difference between what I think and what the Tennessee Titans and what Joe Rexroth thinks is that they are a playoff team. I don't think they are a playoff team. The AFC is too stacked. And for him to go in that rant and say that Ryan Tannehill is a very good quarterback. Again, I quoted that. He can say, I didn't mean to say very good. That's what you said. Ryan Tannehill in his career, he's been a 10-year NFL veteran. He has only thrown more than 20 touchdowns in a season, 5 of those 10 years. Okay? I think an elite measurement of a quarterback being very good is around 25 touchdowns and under 10 interceptions. He's only thrown more than 20 touchdowns in a season.
I will
5 times in his career. And we're saying that he's very good. He is a solid quarterback. With a good roster around him, he's going to get you some wins. But I'm just telling you, Ryan Tannehill isn't taking you to the promised land. And I don't care if they get you DeAndre Hopkins. Yes, you might be in playoff contention with a guy like that. But are you still going to think that the Tennessee Titans are going to go out and win a Super Bowl? No.
And we have a couple texts on our text line, too, saying, you know, I don't think they're just one star wide receiver away from a Super Bowl. Fair. Very fair. I mean, the O-line, we haven't even discussed it today, but that's still a question mark as to what that will look like as well. I will say on the Ryan Tannehill, you know, conversation, I think good. Like, I think he is a top 20 quarterback in the NFL.
But top 20 isn't very good.
No. I understand that. And I think, you know, the difference between his time at Miami and Tennessee is so drastically different.
Well, it's very easy when you have the best running back of this generation on your team. I mean, he had his best year in 2020, and Derrick Henry ran for 2,000 yards. And on top of that, look at the receiving options. They had Johnny Smith. They had Corey Davis. They had, A.J. Brown when he was in his prime. Like, he had everything in place. And on top of that, they had one of the best offensive lines in the league. Ryan Tannehill only can play at a very good level when everything is surrounding him. And when you do a bunch of patchwork on the offensive line and people are still begging you to go sign a 31-year-old wide receiver just to make you in a playoff, put you in a playoff conversation, I'm just telling you, like, he's not going to be that good this year, and he's not going to take you where you want to go. Without DeAndre Hopkins on this team, they are a 7-9-1 team, and I'm not just saying that to be down on the Titans, and you can vouch for this. When it was the 2021 season, they went out and got Julio Jones. I do a schedule simulator every year of where I think teams are going to go. I projected them to be the number one seed, and guess what? They were. Last year, when everybody think that they were going to bounce back from the Ryan Tannehill 3-interception game versus the Bengals, what did I say? I said that what's going to hold this team back is its offensive line, and it did. And I said that they were going to go 9-8, and that they were going to finish second in the division, and that they were going to barely miss the playoffs. And guess what? They did, and they ended up finishing worse than that. I am saying right now, with all the question marks that are on this team, that they are not a playoff team in a stacked AFC. You throw this roster in the NFC, it's a different conversation. I'm not saying it's a bad team, but with all the talent that we see in the AFC, to sit here and say, like, oh, we're going for it, and we're not thinking about the future. We're thinking about right now when everybody's starting to age out. Like, a lot of these guys aren't going to be here next year, and there's a reason for that.
Well, and I think your point, too, on especially since you cover the Steelers or you watch the Steelers so closely and you actually saw this. Because right now for us to say, I mean, when you watch him in practice, it's very, very clear that there is a big gap. But that's normal. He's still a rookie. Malik Willis is still only in his second year. You know, Ryan Tannehill this is his 10 training camps or OTAs. You know what I mean? Like, this is second nature to him. All these drills that he's doing. I know the offense is new, but he's been in situations like this for a very long time. I mean, he's mid-30s right now. I think right now to say it, it's really hard for people to see. And what I need to preface is, no, Junie's not saying that Will is going to beat him out for the starting job, as in he's going to be better than him.
No.
Junie is saying for the future of the team that you could make an argument for why they might want to see Will Levis start games. I will want to say something really quick
really
before
quick.
You make you this
gotta-
point. Tim Kelly earlier this week said something that I don't think got a lot of attention, but I think it's really something important to hit on. He said that Will, specifically he was asked about Will Levis, and he said that Will has done a really good job, and so far he hasn't been a repeat offender of making the same mistakes. So every time they say, hey, you got to do this with your footwork, and that'll help your accuracy, he hasn't made the same mistakes twice. And I think when you're a young guy and you're learning as much as this quarterback is and as much as this offense is on a quarterback like that, I mean, I do think that that's pretty significant for your offensive coordinator to say, yeah, he's done really well not making this the same mistakes twice, especially with how much he's learning in such a short period of time.
And to say that this is the same talk that they were giving Malik Willis last year, Malik Willis was drafted 86 overall. This guy,
yeah.
They traded up with the 33rd overall pick in the beginning of the second round. I mean, that's like a 53-pick difference. Like, they look at him differently. And when you see Malik Willis and all that he's done in the offseason, we've known that he's taken strides and that he's been working with his trainer. His trainer has been sending things to us. The fact that they are comparable right now and he's only been here for 6 weeks and Malik Willis has had a full year in reps, that speaks volumes. I just think getting Will Levis in here with Derrick Henry at the very end of his prime, getting him with the breakout seasons of the other year two guys and Chig and Traylon and Kyle, getting him in here sooner is only going to help the Titans in the future. I'm not saying it's going to get you more wins this year, but when, in my opinion, you are a fringe playoff team at the very best, that it is better for you to look towards the future and start getting guys in place to be looking towards 2024 and 2025. That's just how I feel about it.
Well, and I think it's very fair to say that Will Levis was every bit a first-round pick until draft day, and did not last long as soon as the second round started. A lot of thoughts on the text line, a lot of thoughts that we want to get to as well. But we've talked a lot about, you know, some of the rookies, some of the guys that we're excited for. But what does the future hold for guys like Ryan Tannehill, Kevin Byard, but specifically, if I could speak, Derrick Henry? Could this be the last year in the two-tone blue for Derek? Coming up next on Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Download their app today. Use the promo code THEGAME. And at 10:45, Junie and I are going to give you our best bets of the weekend. Welcome back into Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in for Chase McCabe. We got Nick Kieser with us on the ones and the twos live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning. Junie, you came in this morning and you looked at me and you said, I've got a Derrick Henry topic. And you've done a lot of research on Derrick Henry's career, what it looks like right now. Derrick Henry is in a contract year with Tennessee Titans, as are, you know, some of the older guys on the team that we've talked about. One of the reasons we've talked about all the cap space that's going to be available next year is because a lot of these older players, their contracts are dwindling. And, you know, talking about, you know, where Derrick Henry is in his career, the foot surgery a couple of years ago when they had the one seed, and then him coming back, being able to still rush for over 1,500 yards last year behind one of the worst offensive lines, truly is pretty amazing considering he was the main threat and boxes were stacked against him so often that his production was still where it was last year. Coming in this year, Derrick Henry spoke at the podium a couple days ago. He said he's a guy who doesn't traditionally come to OTAs because he does his own workouts. We see him on Instagram and social media, some of the crazy stuff he does.
Running mountains.
Yeah, and lifting. I mean, just incredible. The guy's a beast. But he said, you know, it was important for me to be here and learn that new offense under Tim Kelly. He's got a new running back coach, right? They made a switch. So He said, you know, it's important for me to be here, but I think, you know, it's fair for us to ask the question when you get a new general manager and you see that some of the old guys who've been such significant parts of this team, you know, it's just the business. We understand everybody loves Derrick Henry, but he is getting up there in age. I mean, production hasn't dropped off. I know you can say maybe he's lost a step or two as far as speed, but production hasn't dropped off, and he looked pretty fast. I understand they're not wearing pads yet, but I mean, he still looks in the best shape ever.
And I think that's good. And maybe he heard a bunch of the criticism from last year, and you know, he wants to get that home run carry back. So we'll definitely see with that. But like I said, I compiled you know, a bunch of elite running backs from the, you know, 2000s and 2010s. You know, people that I grew up watching. And how, where Derrick Henry is right now, that this could be potentially his last elite season. He's 29 years old right now. He'll turn 30 in January at the very end of the season.
Okay.
And so, again, this is why I believe that this might be his last elite year in the NFL. So
really quick, when you're describing elite for a running back, I mean, you're saying basically breaking the 1,000-yard threshold. He'd be in the 1,300 to 1,500 range.
Yes, and I also think a really good stat to see where a running back is in their career is, are they getting over 4 yards per carry? Yeah. I think that is another mile marker that is important. So
can you see how much Derrick Henry was getting per carry last year?
Yeah, I can. I believe it was like 4.5, okay. And that's just off the top of my brain here. You can look that one up while I read some of these off. But, you know, he had over 1,500 yards. I believe it was 4.5 yards a carry, if my memory serves me correctly. Mm-hmm. So let's start with one of my favorite running backs of all time, LaDainian Tomlinson. At age 29, he had 1,100 yards, 11 touchdowns, and he had 3.8 yards per carry at the age of 29. So it's still pretty elite. At age 30, it dropped off to 730 yards and only 3.3 yards per carry. Jerome Bettis.
The bus!
I was giving you space to do that. I know you always do that. At age 29, he rushed for 1,072 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 4.8 yards per carry. At age 30, it dropped off to 666. 9 touchdowns and 3.6 yards per carry. Marshawn Lynch at 29, 1,300 yards and 13 touchdowns, 4.7 yards per carry. At age 30, 417 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 3 yards per carry. So a huge drop-off. Let's see, another good one. LeSean McCoy, age 29, 1,138 yards, 6 touchdowns, 4 yards per carry. Age 30, 514 yards, 3 touchdowns, 3.2 yards per carry. And out of all the running backs I did research on, I would say only Adrian Peterson and Frank Gore are the two really elite running backs that kind of break that stereotype. But again, we're talking about Adrian Peterson, for sure Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
Frank Gore, I think it would be a huge disappointment if he was not a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's up for another couple of years, but I think both of them aren't up for a couple of years just because, you know, Peterson was, you know, here last year. So basically what I'm saying is that the stats are telling us that this could potentially be Derrick Henry's last year to put up really elite numbers. And so I wanted to get your thoughts on that, and especially with him being in a contract year, How do you kind of see that playing out? Because I personally think that this might be the last year that he suits up as a Tennessee Titan.
Well, I think it's a really interesting conversation, right? Because I think after his foot surgery, you know, coming into this past year, about a year, right? Yeah, it would have been last year because he hurt it in 2021 when they earned the one seed. It was, what is he going to look like? Is this going to be the drop-off of Derrick Henry? And I think sometimes we sit here and we wait and we think, okay, nobody's ever performed at, well, you've mentioned a couple, but you think, you know, it's really, really rare to be able to perform at this high of a level for so long. And especially what Derrick Henry has been able to do in his career thus far. I mean, if he didn't break his foot, I think he could have been one of the first people to break back-to-back 2,000 rushing yard seasons.
I agree.
Mean, he was on the pace for it. He really was. And of course, you know, the foot injury, and I understand other things have happened to other running backs throughout the years on why they can't get that second season, that consecutive season. But, you know, Derrick Henry, I feel like we're sitting here and we're waiting, and it's really, really easy to say, you know, looking at the stats and everything. And we've – Marshawn Lynch, right? Like, so many running backs, we've seen them. Okay, well, they're 29. Well, 30 is that magic age where you expect somebody to kind of – they're out of that athletic prime and drop off. But some of the things that we've just seen Derrick Henry do, like his physique, his workout, his determination, just everything. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in the next couple of years we do see it decline. Like, that is what history says, that, you know, when you get to a certain age, you know – you can't reverse aging as much as, you know, Tom Brady might think he can, or whatever it may be. There, you do get to a certain age where it is incredibly hard to overcome stuff like that. But, yeah, he is in a contract. I don't know if, you know, Tennessee would try to keep him. It's not like he has much trade value because he is an aging running back, even though his production still is there. He has more value to this team than any other team in the league. Could it be a one-year option and just kind of try to ride him off into the sunset here? I don't know. We got Jason on our phone line right now, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Want to weigh in on the Derrick Henry situation? Hey, Jason, thanks for calling.
Oh, hey guys, long time listener. I just want to say we would be crazy to let Derrick Henry go after this season. For the standpoint of last year, the offensive line was terrible, and the guy still managed to get 1,500 yards. Now, granted, we can say, okay, every running back, mostly typically running backs don't do that, but his first 2 years he didn't play because of DeMarco Murray. So he doesn't really have a lot of mileage NFL well, the first 2 years. But, guys, I'm going to hang up. I think we should keep him. I think he maybe go for 2,000 because he's hungry, but that's just me as a Titans fan. Well, bye-bye, guys. I'm going to listen. Have a good one.
Thanks, Jason. That's good call point. There.
That was a great point he just made, because Derrick was drafted in 2016, and he really didn't take the reins as the starter until 2018 because of, you know, DeMarco Murray.
Yeah.
Oh, and who was that running back that they had? It was some kind of – he was smaller, shifty running – I can't remember his name.
The text line will help us out.
But, yeah, somebody on the text line hit me up. Who was the running back that started over Derrick Henry? And I even remember before being down here thinking, like, why don't they just give it to Derrick Henry? And, like I said, can't think of the guy's name. He, you know, he's not a big-name player. But no, I mean, that is a good point. But, again, you know, we have seen other running backs that have put up – you know, elite numbers. Another guy I think of, you know, Steven Jackson. Mm-hmm. Steven Jackson, he's kind of a bigger, more stout running back, kind of plays a similar style. Deion Lewis. There
Shout
we go.
Shout out, Nick. Thanks, Nick, for that.
Good stuff, Keezer. Appreciate that. But yeah, no, it's just hard for me to see what they will do, because it is a contract year, and history shows us that. So the ball is in the Titans' court, and I think it also really depends on what he shows this season as well. But again, you know, we've seen like Marshawn Lynch going from 1,300 yards to the following year, 417, mm-hmm. and going from like 4.7 yards a carry to 3.2. That's a major, major, major drop off. These guys hit a cliff around this age. So if the Titans are really trying to turn the corner, do they want to take that risk on getting just a few extra years of Derrick Henry? I don't know. I love Derrick Henry.
Who doesn't, right?
But again, the stats show us that this could potentially be his final year.
And, Junie, you've really hit something on the text line here. A lot of people weighing in on this conversation and the stats that you've brought to the table on the trend you've seen. Because I think it's fair to ask, okay, well, what did their offensive line look like? Did they change offensive coordinators? Were they a run-first team? All of these are great, you know, arguments. But I think you've given enough examples to show in a part of a bunch of different organizations.
I didn't even list all of them. I only list a handful of them. I have a bunch. So
a bunch of where you can see that dropping off at the 30. Yes. The 30-year mark. Well, let's continue this conversation. I want to get to a bunch of thoughts on the text line regarding this convo, Junie. We'll continue the Derrick Henry conversation. Is turning 30, you know, the demise of the running back position? Junie has a lot of players who, once they hit that age 30, it just seems that their career is on a downward turn. Coming up next on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. We got a lot of topics to talk on today. A lot of texters want to weigh in on our conversation regarding the Tennessee Titans. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, Nick Keys are live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios this morning on this great Friday. Hitting on a lot of different topics, and one of the biggest ones, Junie, was your argument on why you think it would be better for the Titans' future to start Will Levis. We had Ben weigh in on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben says, Levis playing years 2, 3, and 4 will be enough to make an educated guess on if he is the future. If they want to win now, play Tannehill. If we are 4 and 8, then maybe let Levis play the last 5 games. And we were kind of talking about this in the commercial break. You can bring up so many situations where maybe for a guy it was good to sit, right? I mean, what is one of the infamous answers? Well, Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years.
Patrick Mahomes
sat, right? And then you have other guys like, well, Joe Burrow got out there with an awesome offensive line. I understand he was the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
And he got demolished out there. But, you know, Josh Allen, I think, was one of them who actually had to work through a lot of those, you know, rookie mishaps. He had to work through a lot of his bad games to get to where he is today. And a lot of people, you know, kind of counted out on him really early.
Yeah. And I was one of those people, because the Buffalo Bills in 2017 were a playoff team. You know, it was the first time they made the playoffs in almost 20 years. And everybody was excited. They go and draft Josh Allen and move off from Tyrod Taylor. And essentially, he looked awful in 2018. Then the following year, they barely made it into the playoffs, and it wasn't necessarily because of Allen. They had a really good defense and a really good kind of running game scheme around his athletic ability, mm-hmm. but you could see he took a step forward. Then they go and get a Stephon Diggs, and he takes another leap forward, and now we consider him one of those elite quarterbacks. So my point in all this is that if you were to sit Levis in year one, and he goes through the same maturation process that Josh Allen does, you're not going to see what he is until that final year. And what have we seen about quarterbacks? You don't want to see them hit the open market. You always want to get that deal done the year before. So I always compare, you know, Will Levis's ability to a Josh Allen, because they both had, you know, cannons of arms. They're both big in stature. Allen's 6'5", Will Levis is 6'4". They didn't have a lot of touch on their balls, created a lot of turnovers, mm-hmm. but the raw ability is there. And so I feel like guys like that, you need to let them play through that. And so for me, I think it will take Will Levis some time to get to that elite level, but his style of play, and especially, you know, mobility-wise, what we saw at Kentucky in 2021 – was very similar to that of what we see in Josh Allen today. And you touched on it because you've been at practice saying that you've seen a little bit of that at times.
He's been fun to watch. Obviously, can't say too much, you know, about it. Training camp, we can say a little bit more on what we see out there. But, you know, I would say right now, you know, Tannehill is the clear starter. And, you know, but like I mentioned Tim Kelly's comments earlier. He said, and I think it was a significant comment that not a lot of people have talked about, is that, you know, Will hasn't been a guy who's made the same mistakes twice. And I'm gonna give a quote by one of my professors, Professor Perez, shout out, at Syracuse. And he said, you know, a mistake twice is a decision. And that just shows how incredibly, you know, like attention to detail. And when you're a quarterback, that's what you need to have. And I just think that, you know, that comment and people can say it doesn't mean much. I believe him saying that is something that's really important, because when you are learning so much and you are learning new concepts every day, I mean, they just hit on the red zone stuff, I think the last day of minicamp, and it's something that they hadn't touched on yet. So, you know, somebody asked Will, like, how much is new? Like, what percentage would you say is new stuff and what percentage is stuff that you've already learned? And he's like 50-50. And then for Tim Kelly to say, you know, he hasn't made the same mistake twice. I mean, when you're talking about progression and a guy who can get there and maybe in training camp kind of jump a Malik Willis and be that backup, Tannehill's been in the league for 10 years.
Yeah.
Right? Nobody is saying that he's going to jump him right now. I mean, that would just be astronomical. Like, that would be insane, really,
yeah,
for a rookie to be able to do that in such a short amount of time. It's happened, sure, but, you know, Tannehill's been here. He's done all of this stuff. So I think it's just and you can have that argument. Well, this guy sat 3 years. This guy sat 1 year. You can say it's good to sit for a year, be a sponge. You can say it's good to get out there and work out all the kinks. Every person is different. It's going to be interesting how they play this situation, because it's pretty unique compared to all the other teams in the AFC South and even the Panthers with Bryce Young. I mean, I would put those other quarterbacks, like, they were their gap guy to tank and get a starting guy, right? You look at the Colts just haven't been able to find somebody since Andrew Luck, and they've been putting a Band-Aid on the situation. They finally were bad enough this year to be picking in the top five and get an Anthony Richardson, but they have a Gardner Minshew who's a career backup. He is a very serviceable option as a two, but never been a true one in the league. You look at the Houston Texans with Davis Mills. Same situation. He was a gap guy, right? Texans haven't been good. They've had a lot of coach turnover in the last couple of years, and they're getting C.J. Stroud. C.J. Stroud will be their starter. Okay. Bryce Young in the Panthers, number one overall pick. He's going to start. Whereas this situation is interesting. They have a guy like Ryan Tannehill, who they're paying a lot of money to. So it'll be interesting to see. I know we've talked a lot about the bye week, and could that be a turning point depending on where this team is in the season and what he looks like in training camp. You've talked about the Steelers situation on how you watch throughout the season him be able to jump a Mitch Trubisky and him be able to make that big jump midway through the season. But I do want to get back to the Derrick Henry conversation, Junie, just because we have a lot of thoughts on our text line right now, and I want to read through a couple of them for you. So we've got E on our text line. So if you missed the conversation, Junie brought up a bunch of stats on how running backs have had a significant drop from age 29 to 30 in their production. Derrick Henry will be 30 in January. E on the text line says, history says in quotes, but Derrick Henry has always been the exception and wouldn't categorize him. We understand that. But, you know, when you've brought 20 plus examples of running backs in the league who you have to look at the trend.
Yes.
You do have to look at it. I think it's important. Doug in Franklin says, great stats on the running back, but it doesn't tell the whole story. I agree with that. How many attempts were there year after year, both passing and running? Was there another running back brought in to share the load? Was the offensive line intact? So many other factors to play into productivity. Have to look at the whole picture. For sure.
I would say the one argument to that is, I mean, these are like number one feature running backs that at their peak were similar to how Derrick Henry is used and the amount of carries that he is given. So when you bring in another guy to split the carries, that's partially because that star running back doesn't really have it anymore. Mm-hmm. Especially when some of these guys are in the era of the 2010s, you know, or 2000 and 2010s, when the running back position wasn't as deflated in value. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to the texter's point, you know, back then, when they brought in a guy to split carries and all that stuff, it is because that star running back's game was, you know, deteriorating a bit.
No, I mean, you're definitely right. I think something, too, to keep in mind, you know, we talk so much on rushing, but last year actually was, you know, Derrick's his most targets as far as a receiving running back, which we haven't seen him do a lot of that. I think, you know, they drafted Tajay Spears. He is a multiple threat running back from what we've seen at Tulane, right? How does that factor into this? Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we're talking about rushing or receiving, like we're going to put it all together, right? Total yards for Derrick. But I think, you know, could we maybe a little bit later see more of that?
Yeah.
Tim Kelly's coming in, a new offensive mind, less predictability because, you know, what is everybody going to think? How often that the Titans are going to hand it off to Derrick Henry and he's going to try to plow through you?
So with the Tajay Spears point that you made, I genuinely think that if Dontrell Hilliard was healthy last year, we would have saw a little bit more of him. And I just think that Spears is going to be put in that situation that they wanted Dontrell Hilliard to be. Younger guy, a lot more upside. So he might take a little bit away from Derrick Henry, but in year one, I don't see him being like a huge feature in this offense. I think he's just going to be a nice like compliment. And you're going to see him make big splash plays here and there and see what the future can hold for him. But with Derrick Henry coming off the season that he had, with all the circumstances with the team, mm-hmm. it's still going to be Derrick Henry, you know, pounding the ball 25 to 30 times a game.
No, I agree. I think he's still, like you said, we haven't seen that drop off yet. The one season where he hurt the foot, but he was very much on pace to, I believe, break that 2,000. I mean,
well, he got hurt halfway through the season, and he almost had 1,000 yards, like, already. So, I mean, even in a year where he got hurt halfway through the season,
he beat people.
He still had, like, a really good year for just your average running back. So, I mean, it speaks volumes about Derrick Henry. And, again, this is just me bringing up a topic. Do I think it's going to happen? I mean, maybe, but, you know, Derrick Henry is a freak. He is a generational talent at the running back position. So could he break that trend? He sure could, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. But I'm just saying that the way the Titans view it, him being in a contract year, that could play a factor on whether or not he's still on the team next year.
Well, and one of the things that we always hear from, you know, you try to move off of somebody before their value has gone on. You'd rather move off of somebody a year early than 2 years late so you can get value from them. But, you know, something we have learned, though, I will say, from Derrick Henry, he has proved a lot of stats. He has proved a lot of people wrong from some of the things that he's done in this league. It'll be interesting to see what his role looks like on this offense this year. Like we said, last year was the biggest receiving year for Derrick Henry. Could we see more of that this year? Coming up next, going to put a bow on things. We're going to give our best bets of the weekend. We got some NBA and NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Looking forward to it. On the other side, Chase Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Well, I wish I was going down to Miami. We got game four tonight, Miami-Denver. Second night in Miami. We will give you our picks of the day, and also we'll give you some picks for this weekend. We got a lot to cover. We're also going to look at a little college baseball. Welcome back in, Chase and Michelle. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle in today. You can also hear Michelle and Junie from 9 to 11 a.m. every Saturday morning. So this show, same time, tomorrow morning. And Nick Kieser joins us today. Let's start with the Miami-Denver Nuggets game. I don't know if you saw this, but Jamal Murray did an interview with Malika Andrews for ESPN, and he got a hand burn from the floor, and it cut out like a part of his hand.
Ooh.
And he had an incredible performance. I mean, that was when him and Jokic both had 30-point triple-doubles, and there's a picture of his hand, and right at the bottom of his hand, there's a huge chunk of skin, like, ripped out. And Malika Andrews did an interview with him after the game, like a sit-down interview. And he said that when he was younger, his dad and him would do pain tolerance tests for him. So when he got to a moment like this, he'd be able to, like, succeed. And he would do wall sits with hot cups
Coals?
Of tea.
Oh.
Hot cups of tea on his legs. Like, so the mug would be really hot, and he said that his dad wouldn't show him a clock, so he wouldn't be able to count down for the wall sits, and then he would also have to pick up leaves with no gloves on in the winter, and he's from Canada.
Yeah.
So that would help with his hand strength. And
Building callus.
Yeah, I just thought that was really, really – first off, you talk about, like, the lengths you go to become the player you are, and I thought that was, I mean, pretty wild, but – they will play game four. Denver up in the series 2-1. They had a huge win the other night for the first game in Miami. Tonight it's 7:38 tip-off. Nuggets are a 3.5-point favorite in Miami. This is going to be a huge game because if you're Miami, you do not want to go back to Denver down 3-1 and then an opportunity to close it out at home in game five. I look at this game as a must-win, and I know people hate hearing a must-win, but I really think after the beating that the Nuggets put on Miami the other night, that Miami comes out with some fire in them. I think a big game from Jimmy Butler, Bam, and even Kevin Love, who's been a part of the equation. So I am going to take Miami plus the 3.5. I'm also going to take them plus 140 on the money line, Junie.
Everything is telling me to agree with you, but I think the Nuggets want to win, and I think they want to win at home. And I think that's going to be their motivation because when I look at this series, it has been all Denver outside of the fourth quarter in game two, where Miami, who was down, I think they were down 15 at one point, mm-hmm. made a miraculous comeback, and the Nuggets really just gave that one away. I just think the Nuggets are the better team.
Oh, for sure.
I think they want to win their first title in front of their home fans, and the only way they would do that is if Miami forced a game seven, unless they get a win tonight. So I got a feeling that the Nuggets take it home tonight, and I think that they win the series in five.
Okay. Are you going to take them minus the 3.5?
Yes, I will take them minus the 3.5. I just think with foul shots at the end, it's going to give them the edge, but it's going to be tight. Like, I think that this because, you know, game two was the most exciting game of the series thus far, and it really kind of became, like, lopsided really quick. So the excitement was very brief. But I think in this game, it's going to be the game of the series. It's going to come down to the wire, and it's who's going to finish in the final minutes of the fourth quarter. I think it's going to be that intense. And take the under.
Okay, I was going to say, are you looking at an under or over or under? I like the under as well, the 210.5 for that. Nick, any thoughts on this one, on the Nuggets or the Heat? Nuggets are 3.5-point favorite.
You know what? I think I like the fact that they are motivated to go back to the Mile High City and try to win it in front of their fans. That's definitely appealing to me. And I think whoever wins this is going to definitely sway the series for sure. I mean, it's just kind of a given. It's game four. But I will say I want to lean more toward the Nuggets just in this matchup tonight. I think that Nikola's too much. I think just him and Jamal, the way that they scored a 30-piece and they both had triple-doubles the first time that's ever happened in the postseason or regular season. I mean, that was a special moment for both of them, special performance in general in NBA history. I think that they're just too much. And unless Jimmy Butler and Bam and, you know, everyone else that shoots, like I told you, Michelle, if they can't drive the paint, if they can't find their shots and if they can't hit them, I think honestly they're kind of goners.
Yeah, and you know, the ability, like we said, to close it out at home, that's probably what's in all of their heads right now, all of the Nuggets players. So that'll be game four tonight in Miami. We move on to the NHL side of things. The Panthers stayed alive last night. Matthew Tkachuk to send the game into overtime. Panthers close it out in overtime 3-2. So Nick and I took the under, and it was 6-even. We took the under.
There you go.
We got the under. Now tonight, I clicked on the wrong game. Let's see. Vegas and the Florida Panthers. Panthers are the favorite. They're at home. That's going to be tomorrow night. I'm sorry, tomorrow night at 7 p.m. The over-under is 5.5, and the Florida Panthers are -1.5, so they're the favorite on the spread. We'll just pick the puck line here. I'm going to say that the Panthers tie up this series 2-2 on the puck line at home. I think last night they felt that offensive momentum. That's something they haven't felt in this specific series. And it was kind of that motivating factor to get it into overtime and close it out. They really needed to get that game. They didn't want to go down 3-0. So I think that they have a little spark in them. But the over-under is 5.5. I'm going to take the under on that one.
You're going to take the under. I will take the over in this matchup. And I think that last night Florida was the more aggressive team. But, you know, Matthew Tkachuk was out and was missing some series, especially in the first two periods. And he came back more or less in the third and obviously scored that goal with 2:13 left in regulation. And Carter Verhaeghe, what a game winner in overtime. You know, I just think the Florida Panthers, I think this is their game here in game four where they're going to kind of put it all together, tie the series up. And I think they're going to make a series out of this after really getting embarrassed in the first two games in Vegas. So give me the Florida Panthers, give me the over. Okay. And I like Matthew Tkachuk, anytime goal scorer. I think he scores again in their next game.
And you should feel good about it because he has 24 points this postseason, and most recently in 2010, Patrick Kane had 28 points just among North American North American, but all just among all the U.S. point scorers, the most that's ever been scored by a U.S. born player was 34 back in 1994. It was Brian Leetch, a defenseman for the New York Rangers. I think I like the Panthers in this matchup too. That third period was really special for them last night, and seeing just the performance that they had on offense, I think that carries over, and I think Bob kind of has his swagger back too after not really playing so well. Glad to see that he's back into his little bit of form. Hopefully we can see him come a little more into himself in the next game.
Okay, are you taking them? You like the, what did you say, over or under?
Let's see.
5.5. I'm
still going to say under.
Okay. So those are our picks for the weekend. Make sure to use Superbook Sports. You can also use my promo code if you've never used it before, KNEZ. You'll get $250.
No Vols baseball? Bets.
We're going to do a little Vols baseball. Wait, I didn't get to it. Vols baseball, they're going to be in Hattiesburg. Joe Rexroad will have the coverage. Best 2 out of 3. Are they going to Omaha or not? I have Southern Miss Vols fans. I'm sorry.
You're not sorry. Stop it. I like Southern Miss in game one, but I think the Vols are going to win game two and three.
Okay.
And they will be going to Omaha.
Yeah, I have to agree. Conference USA is in our blood, Junie, but I have to go with the Vols.
Well, hopefully that I reverse jinxed it, all you Vols fans out there. So if they win, you're welcome. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Enjoy watching some postseason basketball and hockey. And if your baseball team is in it, all I got to say is go Wildcats. And Caroline from LSU, we are facing each other. Tonight is up next for Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Have a good Friday, everybody. 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Have a great day, guys. Enjoy the sunshine.